So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
fans. I know we are desperately out of time here. We're getting close to the end of these 3 hours of our debut of Thunder, but I do understand we're going to go as long as it takes.
Right.
And isn't that the policy with us? You know it from TNT. I mean, when the Braves go extra innings, what do? We hang with the Braves, right? When the Hawks go into overtime, we hang with the Hawks. And by golly, we're in overtime in the debut of Thunder here on TBS.
Tony, this is TBS. TBS set the standard for professional wrestling. Of course we're going to bring it.
Fans, we are desperately out of time.
But we got to see this.
Face to face. And I'm being told that we're running quickly out of time, about 30 seconds left to go, and this program is all we can go here.
Here they go. Here they go.
This is going to be good.
We got to go.
I'm out of time, and all I got is 4 minutes. 4 minutes. I'm out of time, and all I got is 4 minutes. 4 minutes. I'm out of time, and all I got is 4 minutes.
Here, girl, come on.
Yeah. Hello, and welcome to the first Review Away of 2015. I am John Pollock with the returning Wei Ting, who was here technically a week ago for Preview Away. First ever preview show, yeah. Mr. Ting.
I was just in the corner there the whole time.
Yeah, and you popped in for the Jim Ross interview.
Mm-hmm.
So
one or two questions, and then I back in the corner.
Yeah, well, once he could hear you, it was great.
Yeah.
Did you listen to our Christmas show?
I did.
Did you hear the ending?
No.
I put together a montage of all the different clips as I was going through all these of guys who had to say, I'm sorry, I can't hear away. And we had, dude, there were so many of them when I started editing it. It was like, there's a problem with Mouth, there's a problem with Ross, there's a problem with Helwani. It was great.
Yeah, I guess I'm a low talker. I mean, you know, I hope you can all hear me right now. Can you guys hear me?
You gotta watch that.
I said it once. I don't think it counts if I just say it once.
You know what's... Now that term, those words...
Yeah. Don't use them anymore.
I still use it. No, I definitely use it.
You're definitely aware of it now.
You know what? I'm aware of it, but I still can't control when I say it. Like, I can't catch myself.
They're like hiccups.
Exactly. But now, it's...
When?
It's really fucked with me because I'll be listening to a radio show or watching some hosts on TV, and when they say it, it's like that bell goes off. There's some weird psychological, I don't know, some like remedy that you have instilled in my head.
Shock therapy.
That's what you've done to me.
No.
So now when someone says right now, it's like a bell goes off in my head. Is this some ancient Chinese...
Yeah, it is. It is. No, it's an ancient Chinese right now practice.
Oh, okay.
We have a lot of issues in China with people saying right now a lot.
You have created just...
I didn't create this. It was our listeners that created it.
They have.
I mean, it's all...
Maybe I'm going to get the jingle in my head that we got submitted on the
right
Christmas
now
show.
Yeah. I mean, I was always aware of it, but I might have mentioned it a couple times, but, you know, I never brought it up. I wish you weren't aware of it. I wish we had, you know, it was just me and the listeners making fun of you behind your back. That way we could still enjoy this.
That's not nice at all.
But now you're fully aware.
You've caught yours and eliminated them. I never hear you talking too much.
That's one I'm not even fully, like,
I never hear you say it. Until people pointed that out, I had never even noticed that.
Yeah.
And I never have since caught you doing it.
Well, maybe now my thing is to talk loud, talk really loudly from my diaphragm, the bottom of my diaphragm.
John, I can't hear what Wei just said.
Great editing, by the way, on the actual interview to hide that.
Oh, it was seamless.
Yeah, perfectly seamless.
Yeah, you got a little bonus there.
Yeah.
It's a great part about just re-asking a question.
Mm-hmm.
You get the same answer. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And then if you listened all the way through, you got to see, you got the Easter eggs
mm-hmm.
at the end. That was a very fun show to do. That thing took me over 3 hours, I think, to put together. It was quite the beast.
Oh, that was fun. I mean, I think the preview show was really good.
Some fun shows.
A lot of great content over the holidays.
You know what the killer was on that Christmas show? Because this bit me last year. Like, we never do shows that long. And on the Fight Network site, there's a max of 100 megabytes.
Mm-hmm.
And I saved this show, and I wanted, you know, a bit rate where it's not sounding like I'm fucking on some shitty AM radio receiver.
Even though that's what we are on every Sunday. Flagship show is on the AM radio.
Well, that's what people are listening to on. It's a very strong signal. Anyway, I wanted it to have quality sound, of course.
Uh-huh.
But it's a limit of 100 megabytes. And this bit me. I found this out last year when I went to upload the show on Christmas Eve, and suddenly it's over, and I had to do some massive changes on Christmas Eve getting that show up. So this year I was aware of this and got it down, and it was like 104 megabytes.
Shit.
Something like that. 106 maybe. Mm-hmm. Like enough that I had. This thing was my baby at this point. I didn't want to cut any of this out. I'm like, I don't want to take out a, you know, 9 minute discussion point. I want to leave it all in. And I just finally relented and I said, it's going up in two parts. This thing is like 4 hours right now. Right now.
Mm.
And that's why we got two parts.
I think that was the right decision.
You know? I think it was less daunting for people to just see, you know, two-hour shows.
Yeah.
Rather than a four-hour behemoth that they just knew. You know, you see Mount Everest, you're like, I'm not going to climb that. But two mountains that are half the size of Everest, those are doable.
Yeah.
Listen to those.
True.
It's going to take me 2 hours, twice.
Yeah. And that's what we want every podcast to seem like, a mountain that you have to climb.
But way the joy you get once all the trips along the way, all the people that are mysteriously going to pop up out of the mountain, such as Tom Lawler and Court Bauer.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was really cool. But no, like, just a ton of positive feedback. I always worry that these shows are too long, but of course, you know, like we've said in the past, just listen to as much as you want, as little as you want. If you want to listen, if you want to download 104 megabytes and listen to 3 seconds of it, go for it.
I got a late Christmas present from Court Bauer in the mail over the weekend. And do you know what he got me for Christmas?
No, I don't know, because if he got me something, I would have guessed that. But he didn't get me anything. Not only has he not
He tried to direct message you on Twitter.
No, not only...
For your address.
I don't know about that. Not only has he not got me anything, he did get me something, actually. He gave me the gift of an unfollow.
Ooh, he unfollowed you.
He unfollowed me.
Boy.
In retaliation.
This is...
So we got beef.
Warfare.
Now. We got real beef.
Well, I'm just caught in the middle here.
Yeah, you are.
Well, should you ever choose to have a more active review some week that we want to review?
Yeah.
He got me the Stephanie McMahon workout DVD.
Whoa! Yes! Yes! I'll definitely review that.
What's hilarious is that he sent that to me. I had contacted him. I also got him something for Christmas and said, hey, what's your address? I got you something for Christmas. So he sent it to me and said, hey, what's your address? I also got you something. So we mailed these at probably the exact same time. And I sent him the Muscle and Fitness magazine with Triple H and Stephanie on the front.
Oh, how perfect. Wow.
We both think the exact same way.
How many of these do you think Court actually bought to give out as joke gifts to
all his friends?
I
know he got Alex Greenfield, I think, the workout DVD as well. So at least two sales of Stephanie McMahon's workout DVD have been purchased in the U.S.
That is incredible. Wow. And have you watched it?
I haven't even opened it yet.
Okay.
I'm going to save that. That might be our anniversary.
I think we should totally do the workout.
And, on video.
Yeah. We should actually do a physical review and talk about how good of a workout it was.
Yeah. We could do it. We could do it at open mat.
Yeah. Sure.
Could have a whole workout day.
Yeah. Yeah. A workout. Is it like geared towards women? Like moms?
I have no idea if it's female. Because I think there's a Hunter version and a Stephanie version.
Do women and moms have different bodies than you and I?
You and I probably should do the female workout instead.
Yeah, probably. Well, I mean, it'd probably be tougher. But we should. Isn't there a Triple H one as well?
That's what I just said. I think there's two.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I'm totally
down.
We can
work our way up to the Triple H one.
Yeah.
We could do a whole series, right? We have the DDP yoga now. We have the UFC Fit.
Yeah.
The Stephanie McMahon DVD. I'm sure we could get... I was shopping on Boxing Day, and Trish Stratus has a yoga DVD out as well.
Done.
So, man, if you want to spend a month and we just turn off our audience for a month, we could do some great workout reviews.
Well, if this was like a video thing, I'm sure our audience would love it. Download that for 104 megabytes. Yes. Watch John and Wade exercise.
Wear our rash guards,
mm-hmm.
including the hand-me-down you gave me. My favorite rash guard.
It's perfectly... I barely wore it.
It's a nice white one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am returning to open that this week after a month off.
Cool. I mean, I've taken a lot of breaks too myself. So I'm happy to get back in there. And you know what? New Year's, I'm sure we'll see a lot of new faces too. You know, this is probably the busiest time of year for any type of fitness.
Oh, I love when people complain on Twitter, guys who do work out saying, look at all the new faces I see around the gym today. Bet they won't be around in a month. It's like, how dare these people try and commit to a New Year's resolution to have a better way of living, to be in better health. How dare you?
Mm-hmm. It's a very, it's an elitist type of thing to say. It should be encouraging, you know?
Did you know that over the holidays, I had a child? This is my new laptop.
Yeah, I noticed.
Oh, I love this thing.
How many pounds?
About 1% of my old one, which was a treasure chest to carry around. It was the heaviest thing I owned.
This thing is beautiful.
That other computer was just the worst.
This thing looks great. It's quiet.
I'm so scared. Like, even, I'm just going to hold my coffee away from it. I am so scared of this thing, of anything happening.
Where did you get it?
This was a Christmas present from a combination of my wife and my mom, who got this for me.
Cool.
Over the holidays.
And you also got a new phone.
I upgraded my phone to the iPhone 6. I am clearly the guy to mug if you see me on the screen.
Mm-hmm. New computer, new phone. You're a whole new person.
I'm very scared when I upgrade this stuff. I'm so worried about breaking something or screwing something up.
Just don't install any like weird apps, you know? And but now you can get on Instagram. That's the big news, isn't it?
Oh, I guess.
Yes.
I don't find any need for Instagram.
Everybody,
I don't feel I'm missing
follow
out.
At I am John Pollock on Instagram. You could upload a photo of this computer that you're so proud of. You're signing up for Instagram right now, and you're going to do this. I need to see what meals you're having.
I do old school Instagram where if I have a photo that's of use, I send it to Braden and I say upload this.
No, that's not appropriate. I don't want the law radio version of you. I want the personal I am John Pollock account. Like, I want to know.
Have you been on the law radio Instagram lately? Did you see the coverage of Elf Night?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Braden was just
great.
Firing away.
Yeah, Braden does a great job. But he does the wrestling related things. I want to know what your
Elf Night was not wrestling related.
Okay, fine, whatever. I want to know what you're getting at Starbucks. I want to know the color of the sweater you're choosing to wear today. I need to know these things. The TV show that you're watching.
You are the only person that would care about those kinds of things.
No. Yeah. Selfies. Start taking selfies in the mirror if you wanted.
No, that's not going to happen. How's your Instagram game?
It's not much of a game.
What was the last photo you posted?
Let me see. This is terrible radio. Why don't we just move on?
We can. Do you notice that this time of year in January, speaking of New Year's resolutions?
Oh, here's the last photo I posted.
Oh, it's of me.
It's of you on our
it was a video.
Our preview show.
From Saturday night. Heavyweight championship, the biggest fight that the UFC had built up all of 2014 and definitely grudge of the year for 2015, I think, as well. I was hoping I'd say right now in there. That would have been great. Great callback.
No, that was when
that was TV me. That very was different TV. From podcast me.
Yeah, totally different. Maybe at some point this year the two will collide.
I didn't think I was going to make it through that post show. I've been so sick over the past week, and we were doing that show Saturday night at 1 in the morning for 90 minutes, and we talked for about an hour before that press conference started, and at the end of the hour, I don't think there's any more ways to break down the John Jones Daniel
You guys looked kind of exhausted about talking about it by the end, but I thought you did a great job, you know? And I think in the future, maybe we should definitely add more elements. Maybe phone calls would be something that
we could add. I think that we will probably greatly expand that, but I thought it was a great idea to kick off our post shows with this pay-per-view. I think we should do them for all of the pay-per-views.
I think so too.
It was a lot of fun to do, and you were obviously there all night.
Mm-hmm. We bolted right at the end of the fight. We bolted from John's apartment, which is just across the street, but we ran after the fourth round of the main event. It took us what, 3 minutes?
Well, we got there and we caught the last half of the round in round five. Like, we missed, you know, 2.5 minutes essentially of the round. So, made of it very quick. Most exercise I got all holidays, I think. Today, we are chatting about WCW Thunder. The very first edition of Thunder from Thursday, January the 8th of 1998. And I made a big mistake last week. I felt like going back and, you know, we were searching for a show to watch, and I found this. I was like, oh, it's the, it's almost exactly the anniversary of Thunder's debut. And I looked it up to see if the show was on YouTube. It was. I saw, 2.5 hours. Someone uploaded the show with the commercials, and there must have been a big overrun. Wrong. This was a 3-hour show. Cut down to 227 because the commercials were taken out. And me, being a moron, didn't at least check this at first. I thought this was just a 2-hour show that we were going to be watching. No, it was every second of these 2 hours and 27 minutes we sat and watched.
This was a 3-hour show.
So I apologize, Wei.
No.
This was a lengthy one.
It's okay. Thankfully, half the show was basically a recap of Nitro.
Yeah, there was a big gap that we did skip because they aired the entire Eric Bischoff-Larry Zbyszko match from Starrcade the prior week, which we have reviewed in the past, so we're not going to re-review that match.
Yeah.
And that was at least 15 minutes that we were able to shave off of this.
Yes. There's a lot of shaving to be done on this. But, you know, WCW Thunder, I feel like I got this probably before we got Nitro. Wait, how often? Nitro we would get on Wednesdays.
Nitro we would get on Wednesdays.
Starting when?
I want to say it wasn't airing every single Wednesday until well into 1998. I would say at this point, we might have still been getting the 1-hour version on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if TSN had, at most, had just started running Nitros.
Right, and we never got TNT up in Canada, but we always had TBS proper as part of a cable, so we probably got this.
I had just gotten TBS like a month before or something. I got it added to my cable package, and I was just stoked that I could watch Saturday Night and Pro, and then they announced they were adding Thunder, which, to your point, I was super excited about because, Nitro you had to wait forever to see, and it was a crapshoot if you would get it some weeks in Canada. And this was a dedicated show you get every week. WCW at their peak period at this point, coming off that huge Starrcade with Hogan and Sting, which was a debacle, which they will get into on this show. But certainly this was the popularity peak. They wanted to expand this wrestling audience to two nights of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric Bischoff since has said he fought this tooth and nail. He thought it would be too much. It would be overexposure. And also was going to create havoc for the talent who would have to be doing the house shows on the weekend. Nitro Monday, you'd go home for a day or two. You have a travel day Tuesday. And then you're back on the road because Thunder would be live every Thursday night.
Wow.
It was a disaster for a lot of people. And this was at the same time they were expanding Nitro to 3 hours. So you were adding 3 hours of live programming each week with the two on Thunder and an extra hour to Nitro. Crazy when you consider it. Imagine going from a 2-hour Raw, and that's all we watched, to 3-hour Raws and introducing SmackDown all in the same month.
Yeah, just way too much watering down of your content. And it was clear just even watching from this first episode that, I mean, the first thing we see is the panel of Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and was
Stagger Lee Marshall.
Lee Marshall. And it's just them sitting there recapping.
They did the long opening promo.
Yeah, like what we're used to these days is, you know, the main eventers coming out, cutting promos, just building up the main event, maybe your GM coming out. This was just like the announcers at the desk for like a good, what seemed like 15 minutes, throwing the highlight packs from, you know, Starrcade, from Nitro.
Not just throwing, though. In case you didn't know they were going back in time, we got the great transition of... Oh, my God.
We got it so often.
That is a sound I never want to hear again in my life. And yeah, memory serves me that that sound effect was ditched, because I don't really remember it after. But my God, the amount of times that sound effect was used on this.
It's a little much.
Should I maybe put in a... like some buzzer sound effect every time we move on to a new segment on this show?
Yes, please.
With the thunder sound?
How about right now?
Oh.
Yeah. So from the get-go, you get the feeling that this is really supplementary programming rather than a show.
Well, they certainly were trying to make the first one a big deal in terms of airing this unseen footage.
Oh, God.
Between Hogan and Sting, which the night after Starrcade, they gave the main event away the next night on Nitro, but didn't give you a finish. Because, you know, Nitro had this knack for just not being able to get their main events into the ring in time, and they'd always have to leave you hanging.
Oh, my God.
You'd have to tune in next week to find out what happened. Mm. And then the footage was held up. And then they were finally going to air this controversial footage on the debut edition of Thunder.
Your main angle.
Your main angle. Footage from last week's show.
Yeah.
So Shivani, Marshall, and Heenan, they talk and talk and talk and talk. They showed some footage from Nitro with Hogan, Conan, Nash, and Vincent arriving in one limo. And then Randy Savage, Scott Hall, Eric Bischoff, and Kurt Hennig in another limo, hinting at problems.
Hmm.
Some fracturing within the New World Order in 1998, which would eventually lead to the break in the NWO. And I think many people could look back at, if there was a pinpoint of when the NWO angle climaxed and should have ended, was that Starrcade event.
Hmm.
I don't think they ever came close to being as effective as they were in 97.
Mm-hmm.
And that Starrcade show should have been the ultimate triumph of WCW and the NWO somewhat splintering off, and WCW reigns supreme. And that never really happened.
Yeah, but all that money, though. Like, all the pins that they could have sold.
The pin set. One commercial I'm glad was included in this.
Yeah.
Kevin Nash and Scott Hall peddling a pin set.
The WCW NWO pin set of three shitty pins.
You joke, though, but... turning that NWO angle and just stopping it when that merchandise was a huge seller for the company, I can see the reluctance to want to end this off. I mean, from a storyline perspective, that was where it made sense to end it. But from a monetary side, I mean, that thing was – people were still buying those shirts in droves, and they thought, hey, we can make a whole separate NWO here with the Wolfpack and – make it even bigger. At least that was the thought process.
Oh, it's a new color.
A new color.
New shirt.
We heard from Nick Lambros from WCW, the, I guess, legal authority here, who announced that talent will now be subject to fines and suspensions for anyone that violates any of WCW's policies. And this begun with J.J. Dillon suspending Nick Patrick. And then we saw Randy Savage deck Eric Bischoff after Bischoff took a chair away from him during a match on Nitro. It led to Hogan and Savage shoving one another and then Nash knocking down Savage to continue the problems within the New World Order. And during this whole opening from the announcers, they mentioned that Randy Savage had not yet arrived at the building and he was scheduled for the next match. So gentleman Chris Adams came out. Of course, the standout from World Class. And Randy Savage came out with Elizabeth. Savage is here.
He made it.
And Savage just attacks Adams, hits a gut-wrench suplex, lifts him up at the count of two, then gets reversed on the floor, and Savage goes into the post and is holding his arm when Lex Luger runs down and hits Savage with a chair shot to the head, sends him back into the ring, and Chris Adams pins Randy Savage in the very first match in Thunder history. 2 minutes and 29 seconds, which was about the average time of a
Thunder match during this inaugural episode.
This is about the length of that sound effect.
And Chris Adams gets his arm raised, later to be reversed.
That's quite the trivia note.
Chris Adams.
First pinfall in WCW Thunder history. It's quite the trivia note that nobody will ever, ever ask.
No, probably not.
But you'll find that pretty much with almost all of these matches. They're just matches that really weren't given any time. Nothing that really stood out.
What format do you prefer? This kind of ADD style of programming over 3 hours where, I mean, nothing really drags, but it's so fast that barely anything registered for me, versus Raw, which at times can very much drag, but at the very least, you can sometimes get some quality matches that at least get 15 to 20 minutes. What's your preference?
I mean, I don't think I'd prefer either when it comes to a 3-hour show. I mean, I can't get into
You'd prefer it. Just tuning in an hour and a half late and watching the rest of the show.
An hour and a half late and watching.
Then you watch 90 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, I'd do that. But I think I'd prefer, you know, long matches are fine. They're good, but I still have to care about them. You know, if it's a match that I just don't care about, it doesn't matter whether it's 2-3 minutes or, I don't know, 30.
Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff came out next to Voodoo Chili, and says how Hogan is going to get his title back tonight. And Hogan then shares some stories of chatting up some women in bikinis on the beach today and their thoughts on the main event of Starrcade. I would have loved to. This should have been a vignette that aired on Thunder. Hogan on the beach, probably in his wrestling attire, and quizzing some chicks in bikinis about what they thought of the Starrcade main event.
Sounds like a pickup artist video. Approach this woman with a pickup line. Who do you think will win in the Starrcade main event?
Was it a fast count or was it a justified call by Nick
Get
Patrick?
Her number.
Hogan then makes fun of Sting's crybaby tear that appears on his masks. Maybe channeling Lil Wayne, a precursor. And then Hogan decided to delve into his own rap, saying, "You kiss my toes, and yes, you knows that I be the champion."
Wow.
Okay. Lyrical master.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, circa 98.
Are you familiar with the rapper Riff Raff?
Yes. Yeah.
He's training Riff Raff to be a wrestler.
That's great.
Maybe Riff Raff could train him to be a rapper.
Yes. Maybe Hogan will bring up the Riff Raff that was going on in the NWO in 98.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
They came back from commercial and had this just wacky graphics pack for WCW Saturday Night where it featured like this assembly line of like these cars being constructed and then x-rays.
Yeah.
Like of someone's arm and getting to see their bones. And this was the theme.
They're all cyborgs that are
the robots that you can tune in to watch on Saturday Night.
Yeah. Wasn't there a gimmick like that? Some type of, like, android man? And, like,
there was the show Chris Jericho hosted, the Robot Wars.
No, I'm talking about, like, an actual wrestling character. Didn't they have, like...
RoboCop.
No, besides RoboCop. Like, didn't they have, like, an android guy? Wasn't that one of, what is it? Bill Bush? What's his name?
Bill Bush.
Yeah, Bill Bush's ideas.
Of an android... Yeah, you know, there was a lot of garbage at that time, so nothing is directly hitting me right now. You could very well be right. The android wrestler. Mike Tenay is with J.J. Dillon, who brings up Nick Lambrose's statement from earlier and says, as a result, Randy Savage wins the match by DQ. So Chris Adams losing that coveted victory and that trivia note in history because of Nick Lambrose and his new zero-tolerance policy that's being enforced by J.J. Dillon.
So how Luger and Savage seem like they were feuding, so how did the two end up in the same faction?
One of the many plot points you had to somewhat skim over, such as Sting being the defiant force of the NWO and then joining the NWO just months later.
He joined the Wolfpack.
Still the NWO, still the people that had perpetrated all this destruction upon WCW.
Yeah.
I always hated that decision to put and a background guy really in the Wolfpack. It wasn't even like the leader of the Wolfpack. It was like he was subservient to Nash in the faction. Mm. Lex Luger comes out and complains about all the abuse that WCW has endured over the past year and says they are going to do what they want. And this was great because he put his back to J.J. Dillon and stared into the camera yelling at J.J. Dillon his points, but his back was towards Dillon. So some weird blocking here by our director, Lex Luger. And he was also wearing a No Limits shirt.
No Limits.
No Limits.
I don't know if it was in reference to the rap group.
Oh, I meant our pal Shane.
Oh, right.
I'm sure this was a reference to that.
Yeah.
And he continues on here. Dillon says that his decision stands, and Luger makes his way to the back and accepting his fine for clocking a man in the head with a chair, and he was dumbfounded why this can't be allowed.
Yeah. Do you think this was probably during the era where he was listening to DMX?
Absolutely it was.
Yeah.
98, 99.
Where's my DMX tape?
Lex
Where's
Luger?
My DMX CD?
This guy would have been he probably was a horrible person to hang around at the time. So few people had positive things to say about Lex Luger at this time.
Mm.
Did you ever hear the Trish Stratus story when she was with the Law?
Lex Luger?
With Lex Luger?
No, I haven't.
She was, for those new to the Law world, Trish Stratus was a co-host on the Law in 1999. And there was some fitness expo or something going on where Lex Luger was attending, and the Law sent Trish to go interview Lex Luger. So Lex Luger's in some private trailer with his manager or one of the guys at the fitness expo. And exactly like this promo, Luger's back is to the door. And Trish was instructed to go there to do the interview, and she goes in. And meanwhile, Lex Luger is in conversation with this person in the trailer, basically saying, "Why do I have to do this stupid interview? I have no time for this." And turns around, and there's Trish ready for the interview. And Trish basically says, "Did I just walk into my own diss?" Perfect timing. So Mike Tenay, that was our last segment. Next matchup was Louis Spicoli. Not a great run here of performers that are still with us. Chris Adams, Randy Savage, Elizabeth, and Louis Spicoli already in our first two matches. Taking on Rick Martel, who was making a comeback working here for WCW. And Spicoli got clotheslined to the floor. Schiavone promises some of the best action to ever air on TBS coming up later tonight. Some of the best action ever. Ever in the history of the Superstation.
Well, in the history of human existence.
I mean, yeah. Georgia Championship Wrestling, Bill Watts.
No, this is better.
This Thunder.
Yeah, this is
Nash
better.
DDP, folks.
Yeah.
Bookmark it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember either of these men being in WCW. Martel in particular just seems like an incredibly odd fit for this era of WCW.
He started a program with Booker T and then ended up taking that Harlem Hangover, and that really ended things for him. He was having a good run here. He was motivated and had been talking about a return to WWF at the time, but then ended up going with WCW.
What type of character, though? How did he fit into this landscape?
I mean, he didn't have the model character, but he was just, you know, a well-known name coming in. And
but you're talking about an era when, you know, characters are certainly a lot edgier and, you know, needed
not everybody.
Fresh makeovers.
I mean, that wasn't the rule for...
I just don't know how Rick Martel would have fit in.
I think you could have updated that model character and he would have fit in great. You know, you could have taken elements of
that. How would you update that character to fit the late 90s?
Well, instead of arrogance, it would be, what would be a good
maybe he'd be
attitude era cologne?
He'd be an Instagram model.
Yeah. He would have been the precursor to Tyler Breeze.
Yeah. The guy who takes selfies.
Martel makes a comeback on Spicoli. Oh, during this match, Raven's flock appeared in the crowd, never to be seen again in this show. No, they just came and...
Wanted to watch.
They wanted to watch some of the greatest action ever on TBS. They wanted to be there live for it in Daytona Beach, Florida. Martel makes his comeback and applies the Quebec Crab for the win at 3 minutes and 17 seconds, and he is now 2-0 in WCW.
All right, cool.
The Quebec Crab.
It's got a ring to it.
Mm. Forget Boston. They recap the feud going on between the Giant and Kevin Nash, where Kevin Nash mysteriously didn't show up for Starrcade, and it resulted in the Giant attacking Scott Hall at the pay-per-view and powerbombing Hall. And I thought Hall sold tremendously well for the Giant in those clips. Just made the Giant look like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got some international flavor to Thunder as Hiroyoshi Tenzan. Look at that. Talking about Tenzan twice this week, from Wrestle Kingdom to Thunder. Mm-hmm. Taking on Michiyoshi Ohara. And Mike Tenay wisely brought in on commentary for this match. Unwisely retaining Bobby Heenan for this match as well. Not the man you would necessarily want to be getting over your Japanese imported talent from New Japan.
Well, he was very funny.
He had one great line where Mike Tenay is going over the notable skill sets of both and putting over Tenzan and Ohara, and Bobby Heenan says, "Of course, I mean, this guy... Ohara's got an airport named after him in Chicago." Great line.
Very funny.
They explain Ohara being the Freedom Dog after trying to join the NWO in Japan and being rebuffed. And Heenan says how Tenzan is, quote, a strange-looking human. And Shivani would also refer to him as Tenzan throughout the match.
Mm.
Tenzan hit his spinning heel kick. Ono then grabs his leg, and Ohara got the advantage, hit a stack powerbomb for two, Tenzan back with his trademark Mongolian chops off the turnbuckle, and then hits a Falcon Arrow and a diving headbutt for the win in 2 minutes, 57 seconds. Tenzan, of course, a part of NWO Japan with Masachono, the NWO Sting, and the whole faction they had there at the time.
But no real allegiance about that relationship on screen.
No, Hulk Hogan was not in Tenzan's corner.
No, he just happened to be wearing a shirt, and that's it. No explanation.
He's part of it.
I mean, anytime we've had one of these international matches with Tenay out there, it always feels like it's Mike Tenay trying to get his friends to be really interested in this thing, and his friends could just not care anymore. Like, his friends are just like, "Oh, yeah, that's great, Mike. Oh, look at that funny hat he's wearing." You know, and meanwhile, Mike Tenay's like, "Yeah, this guy used to, he tried to join the NWO in Japan."
Tenzan? Does he know 9 and 8 Zan?
Yeah, that's just how it always comes across.
They showed highlights of Ric Flair and Bret Hart's interview from Monday Nitro, and Flair challenged him to say he's the best there is, was, and ever will be right to his face. The lightning bolts to break up this interview segment were nauseating. Holy Christ. Then Chris Jericho comes out. This was the very start of his heel turn. It was the night after Starrcade where they started doing the tantrum gimmick, where he just went ballistic afterwards, which a classic B-roll clip that they use on WCW themed documentaries now on the network, where they're talking about guys like Jericho and the cruiserweights being so frustrated with management and the talent, and they show Jericho just batting the chair into the post to convey frustration.
Yeah.
And that was the Nitro the week before, the first tease of the turn for Jericho, which I've always remembered. Jericho and Flair were going to have a match. This was after Jericho did a promo apologizing for his actions the last couple of weeks, including presenting David Penzer with a new suit jacket and promising this will never, ever happen again, his outbursts.
You must have destroyed a jacket.
Yes. And to my knowledge, the first ever singles match with Jericho and Flair, which I imagine Jericho must have been beyond stoked for on this episode of Thunder.
You think so?
Well, probably less so when he realized you've got 6 minutes with entrances.
Hmm.
Bobby Heenan got Marshall and Shivani to all join together in unison and Woo together at the start of the match. There was a monkey flip to Flair.
I wonder how... I mean, I'm sure Lee Marshall joined in, but it's hard to... I was expecting a deeper Woo from him.
Well, maybe he got a lot of range. Can hit those octaves.
Woo.
Woo. Woo, woo Tony.
They're woo. Like it's like it'd be Tony the Tiger trying to woo.
Tony the Tiger wooing.
Yeah.
Flair then took a jumping spin kick from Jericho, and Flair is selling the leg off of a back body drop and then rakes the eyes of Jericho. There's a drop kick off the turnbuckle to Flair on the outside apron. And then Charles Robinson just randomly turns to check out the corner turnbuckle just to make sure it's there as Flair hits a low blow to Jericho. Just made Charles Robinson look like the ultimate goofball here. Just turns around.
Yeah. But, you know, it's Ric Flair. It's like one of Ric Flair's classic spots. People don't mind.
He was taking direction from Lex Luger, who was in the truck. Put your back to the subject. Jericho makes a comeback, reverse elbow off the top, misses with a missile dropkick, and Flair applies the figure four, and Jericho just taps out immediately. 444, and Jericho gets upset and tears up David Penzer's jacket.
That was funny. Yep.
Then there was an ad for the WCW Big Boys Shopping Network with our pitchman Public Enemy and throwing to DDP, who shows off the shirt that swept the nation in 1997. It wasn't an Austin 316 shirt. It was a pink, blue, and black DDP shirt, and then tears it down to show the new DDP shirt, which is blue and black.
Diamond cutter shirt, yeah.
Huge. Ming took on the Giant. God, there were a lot of matches on this show.
Yep.
A lot of matches. Schiavone spends the beginning of this match confirming that Bret Hart and Ric Flair are going to meet at Snickers Sold Out.
He's just so... man.
Which is fun. He kept saying Snickers Sold Out that it made you think like Snickers had just been like accepted a buyout by Cadbury or something.
Uh-huh.
They sold out.
Yeah.
And selling this as a dream match.
And then, like, he's just so over the top throughout the match. He's just like, wait, what's this? Holy smokes, you mean I get to announce this too? We have another match.
He also teased it where he was, like, asking these rhetorical questions to Lee Marshall about, what would you say, Lee, if Bret Hart and Ric Flair actually had a match? And Lee just comes back, now, wait a minute, Tony. You're not suggesting that this is actually signed to happen. That would be the kind of match as a journalist you want to cover. And just making this sound like Jones and Cormier was about to be announced.
Mm-hmm.
They were excited. Listen, that's their job. Make you excited about matches to happen.
I understand, but it's just such a hokey way of doing it, you know?
Listen, Snickers is only going to bring you the best that's sold out. And they also announced the Giant would take on Kevin Nash at that pay-per-view, which was the famed match where Nash would drop the Giant on his head trying to powerbomb him.
Mm.
There was a power slam by the Giant, chops him, grabs Jimmy Hart into the ring, press slams him onto Ming, then misses a splash to Ming in the corner, attacks him with leg kicks and chops. Giant is down to his knees, but then stands up, choke slams Ming, and pins him in 2 minutes. Battle of former Dungeon of Doom members.
Some big boys brawling here.
The big boys were not playing in this match. Steve McMichael and Bill Goldberg. This match was funny for unintentional reasons. McMichael started the match by leaping through the ropes and then diving off the apron to the floor with a shoulder tackle.
Suicide dive.
I'll call this the Steve McMichael assisted suicide dive because he was not just springing into the air. He was hedging his bets and just launching himself off the outside of the apron. But maybe the most athletic spot Steve McMichael ever did in a wrestling ring.
Perhaps.
And it continues. Goldberg recovers. Power slam from a gorilla press. Rolls into a knee bar. And McMichael makes it to the rope. Then McMichael kicks at Goldberg's knee, hits a shoulder block off the turnbuckle, tackles the knee, and then Goldberg gets up, spears Steve McMichael before it was called the spear. It was a tackle. to Steve McMichael.
The tackle.
Hits the jackhammer and pins McMichael at 222. And the best line of the entire show was Bobby Heenan saying,
"Tony, I believe Bill Goldberg, or Goldberg as he likes to be called, is undefeated. He's showing up here at WCW. I'm not sure, but I think so.
I think you're right.
I think Bill Goldberg is undefeated still in WCW. And Schiavone replies, "Oh, Bobby, I'm not sure, but you might be right."
Wow.
He might be undefeated. He might be starting a bit of a streak here in WCW. And that was the highlight of this match.
The highlight of the show. This was some of the best action ever
this was
on the Superstation.
Before Goldberg was really over, just the early... The guy had only debuted in September and was still kind of a, you know, small part of the undercard at this point before he would just grow and win the title by July. Steiner brothers were next, defending the tag titles against the tandem of Buff Bagwell and Conan, with Vincent in their corner.
Amazing.
What a group that was.
Yeah, spectacular.
Ted DiBiase in the corner of the Steiner brothers. They constantly cut to these three adults in the front row wearing t-shirts that read WCW.
If you want to get on camera, just wear the multiple shirts.
One thing I miss about wrestling crowds is shirts that spell something out among friends.
Yeah.
Or you don't get that anymore.
Or even the signs that spell out something.
I think it's a case that the audience has just shrunk, that you don't go to a show with more than one person now. You can't spell anything.
Yeah. No, you can't. No. You can't spell
anything. Fans are less social now than ever. This is the backlash to the social media craze, is
no.
that you don't have real friends anymore.
No, that's not true.
What would you and I spell if we went to a wrestling show? Right?
Go.
Ho.
Is.
No.
Trying to think of Scrabble two-letter words. Za. Z-A.
That have a wrestling connection. We've got nothing.
Yeah. Well, we probably won't be going to any shows anytime soon.
No. No. The Steiners, the announcers spent the first part of the match discussing the intelligence of the Steiners and how they're not as dumb as people assume. Your babyface tag champs, they're not just dumb jocks, which we totally understand you would jump to that conclusion, but there's more than meets the eye with these two morons.
These two guys look really dumb.
And Bobby Heenan defended that, yes, they are that dumb, but they have Ted DiBiase now for the brains of the operation. Rick runs Conan chest first into the corner. Then Bagwell hits Rick from behind, and the heels get the advantage. Buff and Rick Steiner had the worst spot of the entire show, where Buff went for the Rude Awakening reverse neckbreaker spot, and Rick took the bump before Buff went to take the backdrop and looked terrible.
Yep.
Horrible looking. Rick then catches Bagwell with a belly-to-belly off the turnbuckle. Scott comes in, hits a belly-to-belly to Conan, follows that up with a top rope Frankensteiner. Meanwhile, Rick has climbed to the top turnbuckle, thinking that Scott was going to set him up for the top rope bulldog, but instead, Scott just hits the Frankensteiner and pins Bagwell, and in 337, and they're teasing the problems between the Steiner brothers. Everyone's having problems.
This is how breakups start. You
don't do a top rope bulldog and a guy does a Frankensteiner.
Mm-hmm.
Couples have broken up over less.
Yeah.
So this would be the end of the Steiners temporarily, as Scott would morph into White Thunder and later Big Papa Pump.
Mm-hmm.
Schiavone says that WCW, this is after the commercial break, has fined Scott Steiner because during the last match, he apparently slapped the referee. But Schiavone apologizes, saying, "I'm sorry, folks. We totally missed that during the match." Obviously, a key storyline point pushing this whole zero tolerance policy. I won't lie, I missed it too.
Yeah.
I didn't even see him slap a referee in the head.
Okay. I guess that was important to know.
It was. Important enough that Schiavone had to bring it up afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Then they show the Bischoff-Zabisco match from Starrcade, which Zabisco won, and therefore WCW retained control of Nitro. Originally, they were planning that they were going to give the NWO their own show, which would have, I think, greatly accelerated the downfall of that show,
mm-hmm.
had they done so. Mike Tenay then welcomes out Larry Zbysko. He's got a match with Scott Hall at Sold Out. Quite the card we have shaping up. and says he is the master of human chess, and brings up how Scott Hall got an AWA title shot against Zbyszko years ago, and he tortured Hall and made him cry, and says he has wrestled for emperors of Japan in front of presidents of the United States, and he is going to change the New World Order for life.
Mm-hmm. I thought a good program.
I always enjoy Larry Zbyszko. Yeah. He was, to me, not always the greatest announcer, but always a fun promo. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed Larry. Then we got the great ad, which we're going to hear now. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash making some ancillary income through the NWO pin set.
The following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, the pin set.
The Outsider.
Limited edition.
Nobody else has one. You want one, get one now.
Get your Outsider's pin set for only $15. Just call 1-800-NWO-0242.
That's right, the limited edition Outsider pin set. First 10,000 people that get these will have them. After that, nobody will have any.
Get your limited edition wrestling pin now.
The preceding announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
They just slapped that logo on everything.
I would have been pissed if I had been watching this today and this aired on January the 8th after our Christmas gift exchange.
Oh, God.
Because I would have been buying this for somebody.
Like, not only did they decide to make a pin set, I guess there are people that collect pins. Are there wrestling fans that collect wrestling pins? Oh, I don't know.
There's fans that collect everything.
But, I mean, not only did they make it, but somebody decided to make a commercial.
Can you imagine pitching this to Hall and Nash? Hey, this is what we're doing today.
Pins. Pins are the future. All these kids in years, 20 years from now, they're going to be collecting these pins. It'll be worth a lot.
I'm surprised that they would have chosen Nash and Hall because of their philosophy on losing at this point in time. They did not sell pins very convincingly at this time period in this political minefield of WCW. Mm-hmm. Very risky on WCW's part to go to these two as their pitchmen.
And there were three pins.
Three pins. More than they suffered probably that year. They showed footage from September where Hogan and Hall attacked Ray Traylor, kicking him out of the NWO and spray painting him. And they spray painted Ray question mark. I thought they were teasing Rey Mysterio, but no. Hogan emphasized to the camera, Rey who?
Okay.
We got you all. Clever.
Maybe they just weren't sure what his name was.
Or they realized Traylor is not going to fit on this man's back.
Yeah. Is this guy Rey?
Scott Hall and Rey Traylor had a match. I guess this had been 4 months in the making. Traylor hits him with punches in the corner, hit a shoulder block to Hall to the floor. Then Hall was put into a bear hug as the announcers discussed that this was the very venue where the NWO was formed at Bash at the Beach 96 at the Ocean Center. Hall hits him with this tag championship belt that he had stolen from the Steiners, only gets a two count. Then Hall hits a bulldog from the second turnbuckle, another two count. And then Scott Hall goes to get a chair when Larry Zbyszko, just poof out of smoke, appears at ringside and stops Scott Hall, gets on the apron. Hall's back is to Ray Traylor, and Ray Traylor hits the Traylor spike and pins Scott Hall.
Wasn't that a chokeslam?
It was called the Traylor spike.
Okay.
Not a move that you saw too often because Ray Traylor was often on the receiving end. But here we go. One of Scott Hall's three pins of the year. 4:17. Hall loses to Traylor in a result that stood.
Yes, wow. Amazing. And we saw Hall lose quite a bit on this show. He got chokeslammed by the Giant
in
the recap.
Tons of selling.
Here he lost to the Big Show, Boss Man. I thought it was a little odd, you know, even if it was just a visual and a loss via a distraction. I felt like if you're going to, you know, build to a match with Zbyszko, to have him lose, I think kind of takes away some of the heat.
Well, you also had the babyface Larry Zbyszko note how he tortured and made this heel cry years ago.
Huh.
But it was quite the feud at the time they were building up between those two. Ultimo Dragon and Juventud Guerrera for the Cruiserweight title. Juve got this title shot after defeating Psychosis on Nitro that week, and Shivani Oh, this is where he explained the fine of $5,000 for Scott Steiner. They spent the start of this match discussing this zero-tolerance policy because this took precedence over this title match. Schiavone just taking a hard-line stance. He just wants anarchy. No fines. Let WCW run wild on the NWO. He doesn't care.
Hmm.
He was a Biff Tannen in Back to the Future 2. Just all hell running wild in Hill Valley.
I'll have to watch that
after
movie.
He got that sports almanac. I just watched Back to the Future last week.
A lot of people did because of the 2015, right?
Dude, Back to the Future 2 totally doesn't hold up as it did to me as a kid. I loved Back to the Future 2. Now I can solidly say number one is the superior film.
Really?
Not even close to me.
It's been a long time since I've seen any of them. Now we're number three.
I watched one and two over the holidays.
Yeah.
You know what I also watched a lot? There was this new channel in Canada that I'd never even heard of before, Detour, and they ran for like 3 days straight James Bond movies, and I watched no less than three.
Wow. Which ones?
I watched The Man with the Golden Gun, which is pretty bad, and, oh God, what was the other one? It was the one with Donald Pleasance as basically the influence of Dr. Evil. Where they go to the space station. God, I can't remember the name off the top of my head. And A View to a Kill. Those are fun movies to watch.
Hmm. Okay, cool.
Big fan. Anyway, we got back to the match here. Dragon missed a handspring back elbow into the corner. Hoovy climbs to the top, gets crotched, goes to the floor. Ultimo hits a moonsault to the floor, but barely catches Hoovy. Looks like he destroyed his knees here. Dragon then hits a released German back into the ring. Hoovy comes off the top into a drop kick by Dragon. Hoovy then counters a power bomb, turns it into a DDT. Hoovy driver by the turnbuckle, and then hits the 450 splash, wins the cruiserweight title. 4 minutes and 19 seconds these two got. What a travesty of justice.
Well, you know, despite the length, I thought it was still the best match on the show.
There was nothing close.
No. Okay TV match. Finish just kind of, I mean, for something, for a title change.
I thought they should have kicked the show off with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know how they started Nitro with Pillman and Liger?
Yeah.
I think you could have started Thunder. Give us a hot 10-minute cruiserweight match, title change, more impactful. This was an afterthought on this show and given nothing.
No, and the title change just didn't really even seem like a big deal. So I don't know how long he kept the title for afterwards.
Yeah, he kept it for a little bit. And then he'd go into that Jericho program after this and then get unmasked. Mike Tenay's in the ring and welcomed Bret Hart to the worst theme music of all time and comes out wearing cowboy boots. Gray cowboy boots.
Mm-hmm.
A first in Daytona Beach, Florida history. Says his trademark saying isn't designed to be a knock on anybody. Says he has respect for Ric Flair, but he's here in WCW and has to prove himself all over again. Flair comes down to the ring. He has Bret repeat the saying once again. Flair then says it's the stupidest thing anyone has ever said to him in 25 years, which is definitely not the case. I would imagine being pitched on the idea of cutting your hair and renaming yourself Spartacus would maybe be the stupidest thing he had heard in 25 years. He brings up Bret being 14 years old in the front row watching Ric Flair for the first time. He says he was wrestling Brody in Singapore and the natives were restless. Brings up wrestling in St. Louis. He's been around the world 13 times. Resents Bret saying that he's better. And then Bret says, to be the man, he'll have to beat the man. I thought this was a great segment between these two.
I thought Flair was awesome. He just came in with such great swagger. And this is before he became totally crazy and senile. Like, he kind of seems, you know, no disrespect, but anytime he's on TV now, he's not really the composed, confident guy that you know, he was even at a time like this. I thought he just carried the segment. Bret, I felt, had little to offer in terms of promo, but he really just needed to be there because this really was a dream match that they were trying to put together.
Yeah, this was Bret Hart's first program since, you know, only debuted a couple weeks earlier coming over. And this sold-out pay-per-view was notable because Hogan was not going to work that show, and it was always kind of expected. The January show, the year prior, it totally tanked the NWO version of sold-out. And the thought was this show was kind of going to be a weaker one, and this ended up being the key drawing match this pay-per-view did above expectations. And you watch these promos, I'm not surprised at all. This felt like an important match. The promos were great, and they had this match, and then after this pay-per-view, they just dropped it. And then Flair would end up getting that suspension. He'd miss most of the year. Bret would just go into a tailspin for the rest of the year. This was probably the peak period of Bret Hart. There was this program with Flair and that angle with Goldberg with the chest protector deal. And that was it. That was Bret Hart's WCW run.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Norton and Lex Luger. This was part of the greatest action in 25 years of TBS. Norton attacks him as soon as Luger enters the ring, sends him into the guardrail and the post, getting the heat. He chops Luger, then misses a splash. Buff Bagwell appears on the apron and gets knocked off by Luger, turns around. Norton hits his shoulder breaker for a two count, and they emphasize how no one kicks out of that shoulder breaker by Scott Flash Norton. And Luger makes his comeback, clotheslines him, torture rack, and submits Scott Norton in 2 minutes and 3 seconds. And then he racks Bagwell. Savage runs in. He throws Bagwell into Savage. Way too much to digest in like 2.5 minutes of television time.
Mm-hmm.
Run-ins. Two run-ins. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Way too much. Then they showed footage of Hogan and Sting from Starrcade, the not-so-fast three count of Nick Patrick. And Bret not allowing the timekeeper to ring the bell. God, this was terrible. Tosses Hogan back into the ring, restarts the match with Bret now installed as the referee. And Sting applies the Scorpion Deathlock, and Bret declares Sting the winner. And the WCW guys all enter the ring to celebrate. They come back, and now we are going to get to see the unseen footage from Nitro the next night in Baltimore, where Hogan and Sting had a rematch for the title. And they cut Nitro off right as Sting splashes the referee, but the match continues. Sting applies the Scorpion Deathlock, Nick Patrick enters, and Hogan attacks Sting from behind, rolls him up and grabs the tights, and is declared the winner. But then Sting comes back and applies the Scorpion Deathlock as the original referee, Randy Anderson, regains consciousness and calls for the bell, declaring Sting the winner. But then Eric Bischoff comes in. This leads to a big brawl between the WCW crew and the NWO. Eric Bischoff takes a Scorpion Death Drop. And that is our wild footage that the legal staff had to go over for 10 days to get clearance to show on TBS.
Well, I don't know how you go off air before the finish as often as this company did. And
it was very frequent.
Not only that, there are just so many recaps on this show. This was two recaps of the same match from two different nights, one after the other. It's even hard to go through the show right now without falling asleep. Sorry.
They go over to Mike Tenay, who's with J.J. Dillon in the ring, and he has the big decision to make. He brings out Hogan and Bischoff, and then Sting comes out with the title. And Dillon announces that the title is being held up until they can make a decision. His decision is, we have to make a decision. And Sting must relinquish the title, and Sting then tosses it on the ground, tells JJ that he has no guts and that Hogan is a dead man.
Ooh, ouch.
And this would eventually lead to their rematch at Super Brawl for the vacant title, which Sting would win.
I didn't mind JJ so much as a GM type of character.
He was good in the role.
Yeah, I thought he was dry enough to seem realistic and not overshadow the talent, but still deliver what he had to.
So Hogan is out there with Kevin Nash. And then they go to commercial, and during the commercial break, Hogan and Nash walked all the way backstage so that they could redo their entrance for the main event, with Kevin Nash coming out to challenge DDP for the U.S. title with Hogan in his corner. And then Schiavone states at the beginning of this match This was classic WCW. We will stay with this match as long as it goes, because that's what we do here at WCW. Just like if a Braves game or a Hawks game goes late, you stay with the game. You don't just cut out. He's like giving us a lecture after we just watched a segment that could not air because they ran out of time.
Mm.
And awesome foreshadowing of how this show would end. Nash got the advantage early in the match, the most basic of basic offense, attacks the lower back of Page. Page comes back with shots to Nash, immediately gets stopped. Nash gets sent to the floor, back into the ring, takes the snake eyes, elbow drop for a two count, just a dull match. Page then reverses, goes for the diamond cutter, and as soon as he senses danger, Hogan just immediately hits Page, and Nash is disqualified at 6:38. And Schiavone explains, "We can only show the end of the match. We're going to try and stay with the action." As the Giant comes down, gets into the ring with Nash, they start fighting, and then Schiavone, in trademark Schiavone fashion, just yells, "We've got to go!" And we cut it off, and we can't see the rest of the brawl.
We're out of time.
I just hope that footage will one day see the light of day. What happened after Thunder in Daytona Beach, Florida? The lingering question from Thunder.
Yeah, just very unsatisfying.
A good start to what was a largely forgettable show in WCW history. Thunder would not have many peaks, but many dips.
A lot of recaps, a lot of short TV matches, and on top of that, all for angles that just didn't seem very interesting at all. I just thought this was a bad 3-hour-long wrestling TV show.
Yeah, it really put it into perspective as well, the fact that they had a roster that dwarfed the size of the current WWE roster. I think they had much more diverse talent, but 5 hours a week, just way too much time. Way too much. I think Bischoff was completely right to try and fight this one. I think they should have stuck to Nitro. If you were going to increase Nitro to 3 hours, the idea of a second show was just, it was way too much.
Mm-hmm.
But ratings for this did tremendous. They did a 4.0 on this very first show, and they were able to keep healthy audiences for both shows for a long time. It wasn't until 99 when they really started to dip below. But 98 was the biggest year in WCW's history, but you certainly saw the cracks to this company at that time as the WWF was just starting to fire on all cylinders. That was Thunder. I give this one a 2 out of 10. Do you even go that high? You're usually more generous.
My brain is just like in a fog right now.
You're hearing that lightning bolt right now.
I can't even like open my eyes just because I'm like drowsy.
Are you going to make it?
Yeah, I'll be okay.
You need some 5-hour energy or something.
I need some like oxygen in my system. I don't know.
Are any numbers even, comprehensible. I'm
trying to think of a number.
B squared out of 10.
Yeah. I'll give it a 1.5.
1.5, which is about the rating that Thunder would drop to at some point. All right. We're going to the feedback now. Lawradio.proboards.com. We've got Brad from Whitby. "I played a fun game while watching this. I counted the total number of lightning strike sound effects they used to transition to different video clips. How about you guys take a guess at the total number? Without looking away. What do you think it was?"
I looked at it.
Oh, you looked. Shit. The answer was 25 lightning strike sound effects. Tony was saying before the U.S. title match that they were running short on time, but that they would stick with the match no matter how long it takes. He even said, "But isn't that the policy with us?" No, Tony, it's not. You just built this whole premiere episode of Thunder around showing us what happened on Nitro after you had to cut off the broadcast in the middle of your main event. God damn it.
Sugar Shane. "Thunder, what more is there to say? With a commentary team comprised of Bobby Heenan, Lee Marshall, and Tony Schiavone, I thought that aspect was superb. Plus, Marshall's stash was luxurious. Seeing the NWO arrive was classic. Hearing Heenan say, 'Maybe there's not enough room in one limo with their egos,' was hilarious."
We continue and go to Ronaldo WCW Thunder, good concept, bad execution, and even worse video game. Originally supposed to be a playground for Brett to kind of distinguish him from the rest of the mass, it soon turned into yet another NWO suckfest. Some good cruiserweight action and tons of pointless angles.
Zeke, odd to see two Japanese unknowns wrestle a match on only the second match of WCW's new show. Crowd wasn't all that into it until Tenzan went into the top rope. We, the TV audience, got to hear about New Japan's NWO, which was cool. Apparently what Global Force Wrestling's YouTube told me is real.
Christian writes, anyone else notice the contradiction from Tony Schiavone in the main event? He said they'll go into overtime and stay until everything is done. This came segments after them showing footage from Nitro where they cut off the main event between Sting and Hogan. Also, by the end of the show, they cut it off just as the Giant and Nash start to fight. Speaking of that Nitro footage, how bad was Nick Patrick? I know it's been covered that he didn't do the fast count at Starrcade, but he could have made up for it on Nitro by doing a fast count, but he didn't. It just made Sting look so weak as he wasn't actually screwed, he was just beaten. Although I suppose you could claim holding the tights made a difference. One of the things I loved on this show was everything Flair and Brett did. It was such a simple story for the match of seeing who is the best. Plus, Flair Jericho is very entertaining with a lot of spots I really liked. Besides that, felt very little of note, and it was just another WCW show. Thunder really felt like SmackDown does right now. Just a rehash of Raw with lots of recaps.
Josh from Oshawa, it was nice to see some old WCW as I always enjoy these reviews that you guys do. The first thing that scared me was 3 hours of Thunder. I remember 2 hours being long at the time, but 3 hours felt like too much. I guess all of those recaps needed time to be shown. Overall, the best part of the show was, who wins the Putski Award? I think Lex Luger should be given a lifetime achievement as I gave it to him over Scott Steiner, who looked ripped to the gills, Macho Man, and Rick Martel.
Oh, all good candidates. I usually defer to Scott Steiner. We should have taken more look here as we had Luger and Steiner on the same show. That's a very tough one. Bill from Hamilton. At the time, it seemed like a good idea. WCW was red hot and coming off of their most successful pay-per-view ever. So if you're a billionaire owner of a wrestling company who owns TV stations, why not give your company more hours of television? The answer? Because it may turn out like Thunder. While this show wasn't exactly as bad as later episodes, but yet, basically, it's a harsh reminder about how WCW dropped the ball at Starrcade. Even at 14 years of age, I knew they wouldn't salvage the Sting-Hogan fiasco. By the end of the show, when J.J. Dillon announced the vacating of the belt, you could almost hear the collective eye-rolling from fans. Things I did enjoy were the continuous build to Jericho's turn and the Flair-Brett confrontation, even though it was just an abbreviation of the better exchange they had on Nitro that week. 5 Nick Patrick's slow, fast counts out of 10.
Finally, Mike from Huntsville. So the show started with the NWO coming out of 2 separate limos. The announcers claiming maybe there wasn't enough room for all the egos in one limo. There's probably just not enough seats. I think WCW took the name Thunder a bit too literally. We really didn't need 2 bolts of lightning and a every single time they came back and forth from the clip. Overall, I thought the show was lame. All the segments seemed disorganized. The set looked cheap, and I found it hard to watch.
All right. Thanks, folks, for the feedback. And Wei is furiously searching for an idea of what to review next week to keep him sane. And while he is looking at that, I want to mention to everyone, as we discussed on Review of Raw, at least I think we discussed it, the Royal Rumble is coming up in a few weeks, and we are doing our annual Review Away 2015 Royal Rumble pool. And I want to give a big thank you to Chris Engler, who once again this year has set up. He keeps, I think, taking this Rumble pool to the next level. And we have our own dedicated site for the Rumble pool, where it has never been easier to join this pool. It is free to join. All you have to do is go to royalrumble.info. And you have until the day of the Rumble, Sunday, January the 25th at 3 p.m. Eastern, to submit your picks. And there are numerous categories where you include your name and email address, and then go and make all of your picks, including a tiebreaker question. All of that is up, royalrumble.info. It is open now. You can join now, or you can wait until the next couple of weeks. Hopefully, WWE doesn't mess with our pool, which they have been known to do for numerous years. I know that they are listening and just want to screw around with our pool every year. But this year, I think it's foolproof. We'll find out.
Yeah.
So that's coming up, and then we'll announce the winner the Monday after the Royal Rumble on Review of Raw. But Wei, as we turn our focus to next week's review, I imagine you want to continue with week two of Thunder?
Not really, no. I've chosen for next week. So, you know, New Japan's really been the talk for the past week. And, you know, this guy's not a part of that promotion anymore, but something that people have been requesting us to review for a long time is this documentary about Fergal Devitt. The show is called Smack 'Em Up Reality Bites, and it is, of course, the Finn Balor Prince Devitt documentary that many of you have seen, many of you have requested. So we'll be watching that, we'll be reviewing that, and hopefully it'll be better than this 3-hour episode of WCW Thunder.
Well, we can only hope. So there you go. Next week we'll review the Finn Balor Prince Devitt documentary. I'm looking forward to watching that. Have not seen it yet. And I also want to ask people on the Law message board about future reviews. I feel way you should be in charge of deciding from now on. I want your interest level to be at an all-time high in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And what people out there want to hear from.
Yeah. I mean, we're always taking requests, of course, but we need good ones. I need good ones.
Yes. Let us know on the message board what reviews you enjoy hearing and maybe ones you don't so much hear. If they're too obscure.
No, these people, they love hearing the really bad reviews.
But some also like to hear good stuff as well.
No, it's not even just so much that. It's just, anyway, whatever. Whatever you guys want. I'm here for you.
No way. We're here for you.
I'm your slave. I'm your slave.
No, that is not the
relationship. I'm a slave for you all.
This is a give and take.
No, I'll do whatever you guys want. I'll watch whatever you guys want.
Well, we want to hear from you, the people. But I am giving it to you, Away. You are taking over the reins.
All right,
you are the program director of Review Away.
Done.
And I'll pick Review Raw every week.
Okay, that's fine. You could do that. Sure.
I'm going to choose Raw each week.
We will review the open mat Spider Guard DVD, Spider Guard instructional DVD.
We are going to take the same tack WCW did to their core audience in 1999 and 2000.
Why don't we just recap what we talked about on last week's review?
Review the review.
Yeah. Last week.
All right. Well, as we sign off here, let us end.
Wait, we're almost out of time. I'm being told.
Oh no! We're not even going to get to finish the song.
We only have 30 seconds.
We're running quickly out of time. About 30 seconds left to go, and this program is all we can go here. And they're going in.